The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Taxes show.
I shouldn't tell you this, but Eric hired someone who sounds just like him to host today's show. But since I'm the announcer, they told me. So I am telling you, don't be fooled.
The real Eric's in jail.
And welcome.
Folks, welcome to hour two of the Eric Metaxas show. In a few minutes, I'm talking to Arthur Brooks, who's now at Harvard. What? Yes. Right now, I get to continue my conversation with our dear friend, John Zmirak. John, you were saying something that it cannot be said often enough. The corporation known as Nike that sells exceedingly expensive sneakers around the America and the world. You are saying what my guest Ethan Gutman said on this program a week ago. They are using slave labor, not slave labor in quotes, slave labor. First of all, let me ask you, how is it possible that American company making zillions of dollars is using actual slave labor? Aren't we supposed to be against slavery? Isn't that what all this woke culture is about, that we haven't done enough to help blacks in America? But we abolished slavery 160 years ago. You're telling me Nike Corporation is using slave labor today, and nobody on the left seems to be saying anything about that? Maybe it's about slavery after all? What do you think?
Right. Nike is the one pushing the Washington Redskins to change their name. Jason Jones is involved with some Uyghur leaders. They're urging them to change it to the Washington Uyghurs.
I was just going to say the Washington Uyghurs would be good.
Would be good to commemorate another ethnic group that's currently being hideously repressed at Nike's behest. Imagine, Eric, you wrote this wonderful book on William Wilberforce and how he started a boycott of the sugar trade because sugar was being produced by slaves. Imagine if slave trading companies that made sugar had found some black representative who was going to speak up about evils that happened 300 years before, and he would be their spokesman, this black spokesman for the slave sugar industry in 18th century Britain. That's what Nike is doing now.
Or is it Colin Kaepernick?
The money they should be paying the slaves in China. They're taking money that should be paid to these Uyghurs in China to work instead of working as slaves. And they're giving it to Colin Kaepernick to take a knee and disrespect the United States national anthem. It's really that bad.
About a year ago, I think you and I talked about this. And some things are too painful for me to comprehend and to keep in my brain. So I shoved it aside. But here we are again. How is it possible, my friend, that anyone in America could ever buy a Nike product if this is true? Are there people saying it's not true?
No. I bet Nike denies it. But, I mean, I've seen solid news reports. This is not just something I saw on 4chan. I mean, these are real news reports. Look, Forbes magazine reported that China rips the organs out of the living bodies of Uyghurs and sells them, that it does a multimillion-dollar trade in organs it steals from Christian and Muslim political prisoners. And yet the Vatican just signed an alliance with China. And the Vatican, it turns out, just got $2 billion in bribes from China. So then we know why the Vatican sold out the Catholics in China.
Listen, I don't want people to get the idea that we're being gloom and doomers. The fact is, no matter how bad things get, and these things we're describing are satanic, folks. If you don't think this is satanic, you're not paying attention. This is satanic. But I want to declare on this program, God wins, but God's people need to do the right thing. They need to speak up at every opportunity with no fear, speak the truth, pray constantly when you can for these things so that these things would be exposed. But when we see what happened in Nazi Germany, when we see the evils that happen in the world, if we do not speak up today, when we know that China is ripping out the organs of young people because they deem them political opponents, this is genuine racism. This is genuine slavery. If you're not speaking up about that, what in the world do you think you need to be doing talking about slavery from 160 years ago in America? How can anyone take you seriously if you don't talk about this? John, I don't understand why there isn't a boycott of Nike, why they don't go out of business yesterday, if half of this is true.
Right, right. Well, you know, and don't think that kind of craziness can't happen here. You saw that couple, the McCluskeys in St. Louis. A mob comes onto their property, rips the gate off, and is marching on their front lawn. They hold up guns so that their historic home won't be looted like so many other buildings. And the local district attorney, who was elected with money from George Soros, is prosecuting them, has seized their guns and announced, "We've taken their guns. You know, this couple that you, the mob, you were all with their house and they scared you off with their guns. Well, we've taken their guns. They're fair game." What's going to happen to these people? I really hope and pray that this couple, the McCluskeys in St. Louis, are safe, that they live through the election, because they've been attacked by a mob. They're being prosecuted for defending their homes against the mob. And now they've been disarmed unconstitutionally by the government. That is what the left has in mind for you and for me and for anyone who speaks up against their insane, satanic, delusional utopian program of destruction and political domination, censorship, and party control.
I know this is true. And again, I want to say to my audience, if you don't do something about this, if you don't speak up about this, if you don't put this on social media, any of these things, you become part of the problem. In Germany in the 30s, everyone wanted to keep their job. They didn't want somebody to look at them funny and suspect them. So they just kind of went along until it was too late, until no one had any more power. If you would wear a product that was perhaps made by slaves in China, I have to say, how dare you ever criticize anyone for anything? Ladies and gentlemen, when the evidence is in, which it now is, John is my second guest talking about this. Am I missing something? When we're talking about organ harvesting, a very polite way of butchery that sounds like something Dr. Mengele did in the death camps. John, we just got a few minutes left, but I really think it's time in America to let people know there are things that we can do. Just like Wilberforce said, stop buying sugar. If you stop buying sugar, it sends a message.
In this case, make sure to vote for pro-life candidates in November. Buy a gun and ammo while you can, if it's still legal in your state, if the Second Amendment still applies where you live, because if the Democrats win, they'll be coming for that. Teach your kids about freedom and about the Christian heritage, the founding of America on Christian principles of man has fallen and liberty as a crucial gift of God. Pray and just, you know, be ready for tough times. I mean, my father at 18 was serving under General Patton in the ruins of Germany. People, tough times happen, even to Americans.
Well, that's the point, is that tough times are beginning to happen. I mean, just here in New York, de Blasio's New York. I remember when he was elected, I thought, wow, is it possible that this maniac is going to be dismantling what Giuliani and Bloomberg were able to do, which is build the safest city, you know, a utterly different city than the one I grew up in, which was covered with graffiti and genuinely dangerous. De Blasio has successfully dismantled most of that. I talk to my neighbors. They're afraid to go outside because they don't know what mobs are walking around or aren't. There are probably no mobs, but what if there is one? What if there's a group of people? Will there be cops to do anything about it? That's what we're dealing with today. And folks, I want to say it again. If you don't speak up now, if you don't do what you can now, if you don't post what you can on social media, everything we do on this program, everything I put on Twitter and Facebook and on, please repost it. share it with people, speak up. For God's sake, don't buy anything by Nike. And if you own it, don't wear it. We're out of time, John. We'll have you back soon in hour two. We'll be coming up with our friend Larry Elder. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. Do you remember a couple of seconds ago I promised you that I would get Larry Elder on the show? Promises made, promises kept. Larry Elder, welcome.
Eric, thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it.
Look, let me tell you something. I am so happy for you, thrilled for you, and proud of you that you have made this film with the title Uncle Tom. It is spectacular. I'll start there just so people can, in case you don't brag on it enough. What you have done in this film, it needs to be seen, I think I said this a minute ago, by everyone in America. And I'm begging my listeners and my viewers on YouTube and on TBN to see this film. What is the website in case a meteor hits? And we are blasted out and the rest of America doesn't know where to go. Where do they go to see the film?
Real simple, UncleTom.com. UncleTom.com, that's all.
Is that the funniest thing ever? UncleTom.com. Okay, right. Larry Elder, a lot of my audience might not know you, so I just want to be real clear. How long have you been in the business of doing radio like you are now?
Been doing radio and or TV about 35 years. And I first started out in Cleveland, and then I went to L.A., back, which is my hometown, and I've been syndicated now for a number of years with the Salem Communications. I've also written a few books, and I've been lucky enough to be on the New York Times bestseller list. I also have made another documentary called Michael and Me, where I kind of countered some of the things that Michael Moore said in one of his documentaries. And now I've done this documentary. And it took me about 2 years.
Before you go into this, I just got to ask you, since, you know, again, a lot of people don't know your story. How long have you been a black man in America?
I think that was a question that was asked of a quarterback one time during Super Bowl weekend. I guess they were just out of ammo. I have been a conservative black person pretty much all my life because of my dad. My dad was a only child. He was kicked out of the house when he was 13 years old by his very, very irresponsible mother. And this is at the beginning of the Great Depression, Athens, Georgia.
13?
I defy you. Pardon me?
13?
13 years old. Never to return.
Why? Why was he kicked out of the house at age 13? That's like unbelievable today.
She had a series. His mom had a series of boyfriends, each one more irresponsible than the one before. My dad never met his biological father. My last name is Elder. Elder was the man who had been in his life maybe the longest out of his mother's string of boyfriends. That's where he got the last name, but he never met his biological father. So by the age of 13, my dad comes home and starts quarreling with his mom's then boyfriend. She sides with the boyfriend and throws him out of the house, never to return, Eric. He walks down the street, does anything he can, ultimately becomes a Pullman porter on the trains. They were the largest private employer of black people in those days. And he came out to California on a run once and was shocked. He would walk into a restaurant and be served without having to go through the back door or either be denied service. So he made a mental note that maybe someday I'll relocate to California. Pearl Harbor, my dad joined the Marines, as did millions of Americans. He ended up on the island of Guam, where he became a staff sergeant in charge of cooking. War is over. He goes back to Chattanooga, Tennessee, where he met and married my mom, and applied for a bunch of places to get a job as a short order cook. And he was told to his face, we don't hire N-words. He was then told to go to an unemployment office. My dad went to an unemployment office. The lady said, I'm sorry, you went through the wrong door. She points upward. My dad goes outside of the hall, sees colored only, goes through that door to the very same lady who sent him out. My dad comes back home to my mom and said, this is BS. I'm going to California. I'm going to get me a job as a cook. My dad comes out here by himself for a couple of days, walks around, and everybody, Eric, says, we don't hire people without references, which is their same way of saying, in 1945, we're not going to hire anybody black. My dad went to an unemployment office. This time, just one door. California was far more progressive. And my dad got a job cleaning toilets, took a second job cleaning toilets, cooked for a family on the weekend, and went to night school two or three nights a week to get his GED. The man never slept, which is why he was so cranky all the time. So my dad was a lifelong Republican, and my dad always felt that Democrats want to give you something for nothing. And when you try and get something for nothing, you almost always end up getting nothing for something. That's one of his favorite expressions. And my dad always told my brothers and me, hard work wins. You get out of life what you put into it. You're not responsible for the result, but you're 100% responsible for the effort. And before you whine, go to the nearest mirror, look at it, and say to yourself, what could I have done to change the outcome? And finally, my dad always told my brothers and me, sooner or later, bad stuff will happen, no matter how good you are, how careful you are, how you deal with it will tell us if we raised men. And that's my dad's philosophy. And that's so I've never thought of myself as a victim. My sort of political evolution came when I took my first course in economics when I was in college. And I realized that minimum wage, bad idea. Socialized medicine, bad idea. Collectivism, bad idea. Everything has trade-offs. And I began this sort of economic political evolution to the kind of libertarian, small L libertarian I am today.
Now, look, when you had this experience in college, all right, this was what, the 70s?
Yeah, 1970s, to be precise.
Okay, so but the issue is, as a black man in America, thinking, you know, along conservative lines, clearly you suffered a different kind of persecution. In other words, it's one thing to talk about the persecution blacks historically have met with, as you just described your father's experiences, but now here you are, it's the 70s, and you start thinking for yourself. Clearly, that's not the way to go if you don't want opposition. What did you experience in those years, Larry? Because I could just look, when I went to college, I've been raised very similarly to you. Okay, my mother cleaned houses so I could go to Yale University. Okay, I'm proud that my mother and father did stuff that I'm not going to go into now because this is about you. But they did. My father worked three jobs. He did all these different things. And when I went to Yale, I experienced, you know, woke madness in the early 80s. And I kind of went with that flow. I did not really know what I thought. It sounds like you had this put in you so that you were not easily swayed. Because a lot of people, you know, including Clarence Thomas, they had a period where they drifted away from the values with which they've been raised.
Well, it's hard to answer that question because I must say again, I never thought of myself as a victim. And that's even a victim of the kind of name calling that I get from black people. My mother always told me that no one can make you feel inferior without your permission. And I've always felt that whenever I said something, I always had it well thought out. It was always commonsensical. I always try to back it up with sources. And when you react with a vicious name, that means you're just out of ammo. And I feel bad for you because we're not having the debate. The problems in the black community have very little to do with white racism. I've always said, Eric, if you invented a vaccine to eliminate white racism, it's all gone. Are the major problems in the black community still present? Do we still have 70% of black kids raised without fathers? Yes. Do we still have 25% of young black boys having criminal records living in the inner city that's either or having been arrested in jail on parole or on probation? Do we still have, in many of our urban high schools, a 50% urban dropout rate, and many of the kids, when they do graduate, can't read, write, and compute at grade level? I mean, we're talking about Baltimore, 13 high schools where 0% of kids, 0%, Eric, can do math at grade level, and 5 or 6 where only 1 or 2% can. That's almost half of Baltimore schools. When I raise these issues and you scream at me and call me an Uncle Tom, you're not having a debate that might very well improve the educational prospect of your own child. You're the problem, not me. And so this movie was about, one of my liberal friends saw it and said, I'm surprised. I thought Uncle Tom was going to be a kind of an autobiography about you. I said, that would have been boring. I'm barely in the movie, as you know. And he said, you're not telling people what to think. You're saying in America, you are free to think for yourself without being maligned as somebody who's a self-loather. That's all the movie asked. Can we have an intelligent conversation about whether or not I ought to be aligned to the Democratic Party, a party that opposes choice in school, something that urban parents want, but white Democrats do not? Should I be in a party that doesn't care anything about borders when you have Harvard economists saying that while there's some winners and losers regarding illegal immigration, one of the big losers are urban, unskilled black and brown people who have to compete for jobs that they would otherwise hold that are held by illegal aliens who also put downward pressure on their wages. We can't have a discussion about this without my being an Uncle Tom and a sellout. What is your problem?
What's amazing to me, Larry, is you're a black man and you can't talk about this stuff. So you can imagine, you want to talk about white privilege. I really can't talk about it if you can't talk about it. And when I think of all the black faces that I saw in your film, all hero, one after the other, Carol Swain, Candace Owens, and on, how many voices there are in the black community that you never, ever see in mainstream media. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about some of the folks that appear in this film. I saw the film about Clarence Thomas also recently, glorious documentary. It was like a miracle that it appeared on PBS. Miracle that they allowed something like that to appear on PBS. But there's so many people in this film. Folks, the film is Uncle Tom. Go to UncleTom.com. You must see the film. You must tell your friends about the film. We'll be right back with my friend Larry Elder. Don't go away.
President Trump has a huge announcement for his top supporters. We'll be celebrating the 2020 Republican National Convention this summer, and he wants you to enter for your chance to join him at the convention. If you win, the team will cover the flight, hotel, and give you VIP passes for yourself and a guest. All you have to do is text Metaxas to 88022 today for your chance to meet President Trump at the convention. Again, that's Metaxas to 88022 to enter to win this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be a special guest paid for by Donald J. Trump for President.
Folks, I'm talking to my friend Larry Elder, who has produced a glorious film, which I adjure you to see. It's called Uncle Tom, UncleTom.com. Larry Elder, who are some of the figures that appear in this film? I mentioned a couple of them a moment ago.
Some of them are well-known, and others are not very well-known. You mentioned Carol Swain. She was a law professor at Vanderbilt in Tennessee. Caught all sorts of grief because she, among other things, opposed race-based preferences, argued that they actually hurt black people because you're putting them on a track much faster than they could handle. They would have been perfectly fine at a lesser competitive school, but because we decided that there ought to be some sort of racial mixture at a given school, whether the kid can do the work or not, you're really hurting people. So she's taken a lot of grief for that. We've also got Herman Cain in there. Herman Cain was, of course, maligned as an Uncle Tom and a sellout when he ran, because by definition, any black person who's a Republican is an Uncle Tom and a sellout. Never mind the skanky history of the Democratic Party, which, by the way, we go over in the film, I think, pretty thoroughly. The Democratic Party, of course, is the party of slavery. Democrats unanimously oppose the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, the 15th Amendment.
Larry, I just want to interrupt. When people say stuff like what you're saying right now, I always have to hit pause and say, nobody knows this. We need to talk about this until we're blue in the face, because Nobody knows the facts. And If somebody wants to call you an Uncle Tom or a racist or whatever it is, we need to get the facts out. Dinesh D'Souza has written a wonderful book about this that just came out. But it's almost unbelievable, because those of us who are in our 50s and our 60s, we never heard this ever. I heard this for the first time recently, and I thought, this can't be right. It can't be right that the Democrats are the party of slavery and the KKK. And in your film, you cover a lot of this. Another reason people need to go see Uncle Tom, the film.
You know, Dinesh D'Souza, I think about a year ago or so, was on television saying not a single Republican owned slaves. He got fact-checked. And it turned out that the fact-check organization found like 8 or 9 people, Republicans who owned slaves, out of all the Democrats who owned slaves. I mean, you know, it's kind of a low bar, but for the most part, this was entirely a practice done by Democrats. One of the points I make in the film is that as a percentage of the party, more Republicans voted for the Civil Rights Act than did Democrats. And that brings us to this so-called switch that Democrats often say. Okay, we will concede we were pretty lousy back in the day. But then in the 60s, because of the passage of the Civil Rights Act, all the racist Democrats left our party And then went over to your party, and now you're the party of racism. Here's the problem with that narrative. If you look at all the Democrats who voted against the Civil Rights Act of 1964 in the Senate, all the Democrats who voted against the Civil Rights Act of 1964 in the House, and ask yourself, how many of them switched to the Republican Party? The answer is one in the Senate. His name is Strom Thurmond, and one in the House. I can't even remember his name. And think about it. You're a white racist, and you're mad because the Civil Rights Act of 64 just passed, and you're going to join the party whose members voted for it at a higher percentage than the party you left? Does that make any sense?
Well, people, again, this is something that I learned watching the film, okay? So there's a lot of stuff in there that was news to me. The fact that the president happened to be a Democrat, yeah, okay, Johnson was a Democrat. Kennedy was a Democrat, but Kennedy was a Democrat in the day when, I don't know if you say it in the film or I've just been saying it so much myself, but everything he stood for, he would have to be a Republican today, Kennedy. So they were the ones pushing this. And as you say, because the president was a Democrat, they kind of get credit for this, but the entirety of the legislative body pushing for this was Republican. I have never heard this. By the way, most people also don't know that Jackie Robinson was a Republican. He campaigned for Richard Nixon. I mean, there's so much material that has been kept out by the media, out by academia. We've heard the same narrative over and over, which is why your film is, to call it a breath of fresh air, is an understatement.
And Eric, while you're on the subject of Jackie Kennedy Onassis wrote a letter to a Republican who is retiring from the House named Bill McCullough and thanked him for his stewardship in navigating the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And she said, without your support, this would not have happened. And McCullough was a Republican. Senator Eric Dirksen, Republican from Illinois, received an award from the NAACP called the Spirit Award for his help in navigating the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And it was Al Gore's father who participated in what was then, and I still believe is, the longest filibuster in the history of the Senate to make sure that the filibuster bill never came on the floor for a vote. Al Gore's father was a Democrat, died a Democrat. So don't give me this business about the switch. It never happened. The reason the South became Republican happened gradually, took about 30 years. It's the same reason everybody else became Republican. The Democrats became too crazy. More pro-tax, more pro-union, more pro-abortion, more anti-religion, and the South became more conservative, and Jim Crow fell, and that's what happened. And so the idea that there was some big switch all of a sudden because of the Civil Rights Bill is completely refuted by the tiny number of Democrats who, in fact, left the party and became Republicans.
We've just got a couple of seconds in this segment, but I am attacked a lot for saying what I think about the Black Lives Matter movement and the organization, that it's got nothing to do with whether you believe Black Lives Matter, because anybody but a fool knows that Black Lives Matter, but it has become a cudgel with which to beat anyone who is not a cultural Marxist and an anarchist, and the country is going up in flames, and it's got nothing to do with racism and everything to do with people using racism. Just a couple of seconds, and then we're going to go to a break, and then we'll talk on the other side of the break.
Well, it's getting people killed. It's a bogus narrative that the police are out there mowing down Black people. The data show the opposite. If anything, the police are more hesitant, more reluctant to shoot a Black person than to shoot a white person, and it's causing the police to pull back, and therefore crime is going up. So it's a movement that is getting people killed.
Okay, since you're a radio man, you knew to stop. You're good. You're good. You're good. We'll be right back with Larry Elder. The film is Uncle Tom, UncleTom.com. You must check it out. Won't you lay me down in your breast and let me get my stuff? I know I got nothing on you. Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show, and I am talking to my friend Larry Elder, who is a voice in the media and has made a film called Uncle Tom, UncleTom.com. In these crazy times, boy, folks, you need to see this film. Larry, let's talk about what's happening in the country right now. Everything I say on my program and on my social media, I get from my Black heroes. Bob Woodson is at the top of the list, telling me what his perspective is. You're one of those people. Everything I get on this stuff, I get from my black friends and the people that I follow. So speaking as a black man, what do you say to people in my audience who, some of whom are tremendously confused by this, and I think it's because of white guilt?
It's a combination of white guilt, a combination of Trump derangement syndrome, and a combination of, I think, coronavirus cabin fever, because people have been locked up for a couple of months. So it's sort of a perfect storm. And I must also say a bunch of young people have been indoctrinated by what I call the access of indoctrination, that is Hollywood, academia, and media, that have told them that they are a victim, that racism and sexism and whatever ism you want remain major factors in American life, when none of these things is significant anymore. Racism has never been a more insignificant factor in success in American life. I thought when Obama got elected in 2008, we put a fork in the idea that there was institutional racism. And you're looking at all these things that are going on right now in America. In Baltimore in 2015, when Freddie Gray died in police custody, he's the one who's hit that van. You're talking about a city that's about 50% black. The mayor was black. The number one and number two people running the police department were black. The state attorney that brought the charges against the six officers was black. Three of the six officers were black. The judge before whom two of the officers tried their cases, by the way, and found them not guilty, was black. All of city council was Democrat, majority black. The U.S. attorney at the time, Loretta Lynch, was black. And the president of the United States was black. We're talking about institutional racism. I'm reminded of what comedian Wanda Sykes said. How are you going to complain about the man when you are the man? It is ridiculous. And many of these cities have had black police chiefs and black mayors, and they've appointed the black police chiefs. Some of these people simply believe that black people ought not be held responsible for the crimes that they commit. Now, I'm not saying there aren't bad cops, but look at the numbers. You're talking about 50 million calls that the police have to answer every year, about 11 million arrests. Out of all those interactions, you're talking about 1,000 people that have been killed by the police. That is a 0.002% or something like that. And almost all the people killed by the police were either resisting violently, or resisting with a weapon, or both. Every now and then, an unarmed person is killed. By the way, there are more unarmed white men were killed last year, 19, than unarmed black people shot and killed, 9. Altogether, there were 15 unarmed blacks killed. As I said, 19 unarmed whites shot and killed, and the number of unarmed whites altogether is somewhat higher than that. I doubt that your audience can name an unarmed white person who'd be killed by the police, because the media does not care. Actually, they drive this narrative.
It's funny you say this, because there was an article in the National Review this morning that documents everything that you're saying. Dave Chappelle, as you know, had a 30-minute special that was on recently. And I've always loved Dave Chappelle, and I adore Candace Owens and Laura Ingraham. And he says incredibly nasty things about them in that. But I want to say that it was very emotional and compelling. And because of the credibility he has with me as somebody who's a speaker of truth, I took it in and it gave me a different perspective. And then this morning, I read this piece in National Review, which quotes some of the statistics you just did. And it's like the scales fall from my eyes. And I think to myself, Dave Chappelle really believes this. We got to give people some credit in a sense that he really believes what he's saying. He's wrong, but the emotion is so powerful. That to me is the problem now, Larry, is that people are thinking with their emotions, which means they're not thinking.
And without trying to be dismissive, he is a comedian. I mean, he's not exactly an intellect. He's not exactly a scholar. He hasn't studied the data any more than that guy that did that rant at the BET ceremony, Jesse Williams, and he was praised by Time magazine. And I wrote a column refuting virtually everything he said. He talked about how white people are not being killed every day, when in fact, twice as many white people are killed by the police every year as are black people. And I mentioned more unarmed whites are killed by the police, or at least as many as are unarmed blacks. And nobody seemed to care about that. What he said is getting people killed. The real danger in the black community are other young blacks. About half of all the homicides in this country are black victims, and almost all of those black victims are killed by other black people. A young black man is 8 times more likely to be a victim of a homicide than a young white man. And the police do, in fact, kill 2.5 times as many blacks over whites. But when you look at the crime rate, one would have predicted that number would have been even higher. And that's because the police are hesitant to pull the trigger on a black suspect, as was proven by a Harvard economist, happened to be black, named Roland Fryer. He did a survey because he assumed that the police were using deadly force disproportionately against blacks. Was surprised nobody had really done a survey on it. So he thought he was going to corroborate his notion. He said the conclusions were the most surprising of his career. Not only were the police not using deadly force disproportionately against blacks, but they were more hesitant, more reluctant to pull the trigger on a black suspect than a white suspect, probably because they feared becoming the next viral white hated cop. So it is simply not true that the police are out getting black people. The surveys do not bear that data out. And every 3 years since the middle 1990s, Eric, there's something called the Police Public Contact Survey that the FBI does. They ask 60,000 people, did you have contact with the police last year? If the answer is yes, what was your contact like? How were you spoken to? How were you treated? Were you physically, anything like that? Nobody can find any kind of pattern of abuse. Now, isn't that good news? Aren't you happy that whatever you're complaining about isn't because of racism, it's because of something else? And instead of that being good news, I'm an Uncle Tom. I'm a sellout. I'm a self-loader.
Well, listen, you know what we haven't talked about, Larry? The one thing we have not talked about is that Uncle Tom is one of the greatest heroes in American literature. It wasn't until a year ago that I read the book, Uncle Tom's Cabin. And when I read it, I said, I don't think I have ever read a more Christian book in my life. I don't think I've ever read a piece of fiction that is utterly suffused with Christian principles and with the reality of the Christian life. And Uncle Tom is a type of Christ, the most loving, self-sacrificial hero in literature. And the idea that it turned around and got to be used as a pejorative, when we come back, I want to talk about that. But I find it fascinating that you wanted to call your film Uncle Tom. It is about time we understand who Uncle Tom was, what a hero he was. Folks, the film is UncleTom.com. Check it out. If you don't check it out, I'm coming after you. We'll be right back.
Nobody you meet could ever see the loneliness there inside you.
Hey, folks, I'm talking to Larry Elder. Larry, listen, if people want to find you, where do they go?
LarryElder.com. I'm also do videos. We have the Larry Elder Show radio channel, also the Larry Elder Epic Times channel on YouTube.
Epic Times. I love Epic Times. Okay, I just want to ask you, you know, we're talking about things that when you hear them, when people see your film, Uncle Tom, they're just going to walk away going like, how did I not know that? Isn't that the issue that you and I, we may have the facts, but unless you have the distribution, right? Now, listen, we both have national radio shows, but the fact is that this message, which is based in facts, like many other messages based in facts, when it goes against the secular leftist narrative, it's tough to get it out there. Even Tucker Carlson, you know, gave you just a few minutes to talk about this. This is earthquake stuff. What you put in this film, if every American saw this film, it would fundamentally change the country. I'm not speaking hyperbolically. It is that important. Have you been able to get on any mainstream media to talk about this film? Is anybody willing to deal with this?
I think it's happening. I'm scheduled to go on NPR pretty soon. The BBC has contacted me. I've done Swedish television. I've also done South Korean television and newspapers. So it's starting to get out. If you go on IMDb, and let's just look at the reviews, there are about 200 people that have registered a review. And so far, the film is getting a 9.9 rating. There have been 57 people that have written reviews. All 57 written reviews, Eric, have given it 10 stars out of 10. I have never seen...
That's mathematically impossible. Are you serious?
I am serious.
That's got to be a record.
Some of the comments are things like best documentary I've ever seen. One guy said, and I'm a filmmaker. This is the finest documentary I have ever seen. Honestly, I am blown away to tears reacting to the reaction to my documentary. It's just stunning, Eric. Stunning. I knew it was good. But 9.9, all 10 written reviews.
No, that is insanity. That's insanity. People need not only to see this film, but they need to get others to see it. Find people, folks, who are slightly open-minded and pay for them to see this film. This will change America. We need to hear about this. A final question. We just got a minute and a half left, Larry, but What was it that led you, who are, you know, full-time media guy, radio, whatever, to make this film? What possessed you to make
this film? The young director, Justin Malone, is the director and co-writer, and he approached me about doing this project. And he had interviewed a couple of other people. It was his idea. He hadn't gotten any started, had no money. And I asked him how much he thought it would cost to complete the project. I asked him if I could be co-writer and let's partner, let's get this thing done. And so that's what happened. It took 2 years for the two of us to get this together. The legal stuff you have to go through to get the right to do this and to do that, it's mind-boggling what you have to do to make a film. We finally got it done. It was released on June 19th, which is the anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation. It's now Juneteenth, and I understand it may someday be a federal holiday. That's why we introduced it on that day. And you're quite right about Uncle Tom. He was a hero of Uncle Tom's Cabin. The bad guy was Sambo Tom, and it just shows you that people have never read the novel. By the way, Abraham Lincoln, when he met the writer Harriet Beecher Stowe, said, "You are the young lady that started this Civil War," because that book was read by Northerners who knew nothing at all about slavery, and they were appalled by the horror of slavery, and that helped ignite what became...
Well, this is what I was just going to say, to close with my audience, to say that if anybody wants to know how we know racism is wrong, it's called the Bible. The Bible has always been the measure by which we say racism is wrong. Otherwise, I don't even know where people get the idea that racism is wrong, because there's been nothing but racism since the beginning of human history. We're all sinners, and it is the Bible and people holding the Bible that said, this is an abomination. We must end this. We must end slavery. Larry, we're out of time. I just want to tell you, I am just so proud of you. Anything I can do to help you get this out, we will air this multiple times on YouTube. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.